welcome once again to the 343 Sparkcast, and I'm doing my radio voice this morning because we're recording this very early in the morning. My name is David Ellis. I'm back once again. I'm joined by a very special guest. You might know him as Vociferous. I know him as Jeremy Patnout.
That's good.
It's, you know, you think you get names right.
I get caught on it sometimes, too. So
you might recognize his voice. Jeremy's a writer here at the Waypoint team. He does pretty much all of our fiction-based pieces into the behind-the-scenes, into the Halo lore. You also co-created the Different Way to Campaign series on Waypoint. Jeremy, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be here. But our team is part of the Waypoint community team. Basically, I'm one of the writers that helps out with the fiction stuff, like you said. So it's good to come on board.
And Jeremy knows more about, I was considered a Halo super fan on the press side. But coming over here, I realize I don't know squat about squat compared to Jeremy. You also might know Jeremy, him and Jacob Benton, one of our other guys, used to work on a website called Ascendant Justice. And that's how you guys kind of became known within the Halo community.
Yep. Kokob Jojo and Vociferous.
Together forever.
That's right. And somehow we made it here together. We started off in Ascended Justice, but we ended up here, and we're really happy to be working on 343 stuff.
Well, I'm glad to have you in here this morning. We're doing basically our intro. We've actually recorded a couple of segments. So this podcast is going to be really good. I don't just say that because I'm in both segments, but it might be part of the reason, but we visited Bungie earlier this week and checked out the Noble Map Pack and got interviews with Eric Osborne, a.k.a. Irk, and Derek Carroll, a.k.a. Mantis, who's the lead designer on the Map Pack.
Very cool.
Talk a little bit about it. So we're actually going to go straight into that interview. It runs for about 8-9 minutes. And when we come back, Jeremy and I are going to talk a little bit more about the maps, and we got some other goodies planned for you.
So awesome.
We'll see you in a bit. All right, so we're here at Bungie in the theater. We're recording this during a press day for the Noble Map Pack, and I'm joined by two gentlemen you may know. I will let you introduce yourselves.
My name is Eric, also known as Irk.
My name is Derek, also known as Mantis.
And, of course, Eric, what's your title these days?
I don't really have a title. I'm just kind of like the guy on the internet, I think.
Man with beard.
Man with beard. We have... share that in common.
It's lovely. You can't see it because this is audio only, but
Derek, not so much.
And Derek, you were lead designer on the Noble Map Pack.
Yes.
Good to paint the scene, though, right?
You got to paint it. It's, well, they can't see. We're sitting in this theater, which you may recognize from the legendary commentary for Halo Reach. And I'm sitting in between these two gentlemen. They're kind of crowding me.
It's kind of a sandwich.
It's tight.
A little sandwich action.
I was just sitting here. I don't know what happened.
And my hand went in your thigh. It got out of control, yeah. But everything's...
TSA for a second there.
Everything's good now.
So we can't get a podcast out, but you guys are getting one in. We're supplying the
dojo.
The Noble Map Pack, you know, it's the first post-release DLC. You guys have been updating the playlist, updating matchmaking. This is the first new piece of content people have had, obviously, since launch. How do you come up with these DLC maps, and how do you decide what you're going to do? Because you don't really have all the information post-launch of how people are reacting to all the changes that have been made with Reach. You had some of it from the beta. So what was that thought process?
I guess we knew we wanted more invasion spaces, and we wanted more more symmetrical, kind of fair fights that, you know, we could fill pretty much all the hoppers with. And so we went from there.
It's really versatile map pack is what he's trying to say, I think. So yeah, they're definitely looking at rolling off the project. What do we need? Multiplayer maps is a definite place we wanted to focus on. So we've got more Team Slayer maps, more objective maps, big team, invasion. So these maps slot into the existing playlist offerings really, really well.
I talked to Marcus in February back when I was still at 1UP. We talked a little bit about that was when it was first announced that the multiplayer maps would primarily come from campaigns play spaces. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there would be changes made. All these maps, they may have some things in common thematically with some of the campaign spaces, but they're all new spots. What are the advantages and disadvantages between the two types of design, whether using campaign spaces or all new spots?
For Reach, we actually didn't like rip stuff out of campaign. We did design the multiplayer spaces and then kind of insert them into the campaign. So I guess the advantage of doing it after the game ships is that we didn't have to even think about campaign at all and just make really great multiplayer spaces. During Reach, there was a little give and take with campaign in terms of, you know, moving a door, just getting, you know, basically, it's just more time to get it right. And this was just a more streamlined experience just because we only had to deal with competitive multiplayer.
And there's just a lot less hurdles for them to overcome. They know the engine, they know the game, they know what content needs to be made. So it's more about just getting in and executing and iterating on the idea.
It's good that you bring up iteration, because one of the things that I think Bungie, it's one of your strong suits, and you probably don't get enough credit for it, is the amount of playtesting you guys do with all the projects that you've produced. And can you talk a little bit about the iterative process on these maps? I mean, from the first pass at it to final, there's probably a lot of changes that go through it. And obviously the playtests kind of change that. How does the map play differently now than any of these maps play than the first time you actually playtested them?
Well, I mean, all the details are obviously different. The first time we play it, it's gray. It's a mass out space. None of the textures are there. It looks terrible. It's just really the ideas in our heads, and kind of, you know, we talk about it a lot more than we play it at first. And we just kind of fly around or walk around the space and kind of go, oh, and this is where the couch will go, that kind of thing. So, you know, over the course, you know, once we get it to a point where it's like, okay, this is real, this is playable, I mean, we play it every single day. And multiple times a day sometimes, and then different groups of people play it. We'll have the artists play in their play test, and then the testers play a, you know, for real play test.
Are you saying the artists aren't for real?
The artists are terrible, yeah. I'm saying that. I'll go on record. No, it's fine. It's just you don't have a good time if people of, you know, varying skills get in the same game. It's just not. That's why we have matchmaking. But so, and they get different things out of it. You know, a different group will want to just kind of have a casual game where they're just mostly looking around and how it feels. And then the testers will hammer on like time, distance from start to power weapons and things like that. Everybody's looking for something different.
That's definitely one of the things as I've gone around the studio and talked to the guys about Postmortem and what they remember about the map, you know, creating the maps, the amount of iteration, the amount of playtest that they were able to put into, since they were just laser focused on these three spaces, so they can take the time to really craft great player routes and think about where, you know, how vehicles are going to impact each space, and, you know, with game types like stockpile and mm-hmm. where the flags are, where the capture points are, they can tweak those to, you know, the nth degree and really think about how players are going to experience it, where they're going to fit into the hoppers, and how they can capitalize on the team that they have.
Playing Anchor 9, it reminded me a lot of the Pit from Halo 3 in a lot of ways, and kind of the way it's laid out with both a wide variety of vertical and horizontal gameplay.
I said it earlier, but I want to go on record and say it's a pixel perfect remake of the Pit.
Derek, you're going to stand by that?
What's the Pit? No. So it's like the Pit in that it's a symmetrical, fair, smallish space. We love the Pit. We want to have a map similar to the Pit, but not the Pit in Halo Reach.
Do you guys have a favorite of the maps you played that in the DLC pack?
I really like Tempest.
See, you said it first, but I was going to say I really like Tempest. And in our interviews earlier, we both talked about Tempest.
And you described Tempest as being kind of an inverted Valhalla.
Kind of.
What does that mean?
Well, it's got the hump.
Rare disease. And now you said hump.
I said hump. I've said it several times now. Hump.
Yes.
So Tempest, because it has that, let's call it a spine down the middle, when you're approaching it in the Warthog, you can't see what's on the other side. It's like this really long, the whole map is one long hill, basically. And it, just going off that sweet jump, and then, you know, depending on how good your team coordination is, you may be jumping into rockets, or you may be jumping into Glorious Victory.
Right. The center of the map's open right there. There's like a lot of intestinal caverns all throughout those rocks to let you kind of be sneaky and get out of fire and regroup and play a little cat and mouse. You can jump up on the rocks, come down on a guy, get a sweet assassination. It feels really cool going through there.
I think the spine really affects, like, specific map types or game types, like Headhunter we played on there, and I noticed a lot of people were congregating towards the beach, and just because of the hills design, well, I was scavenging. I basically would roll up after everyone died and just roll through the beach.
Magnet.
Yeah.
Come to me. Yeah.
Watching people chase skulls down the hill is just hilarious. You're not gonna catch the skulls.
Going to Breakpoint and it being an invasion map with invasion game type, what are some things that you guys have improved on from the first two invasion maps, and things that you've actually used to iterate in this version of invasion? Because it's a little bit different than what it is on Spire and even Boneyard.
Yeah, I mean, so the number one thing is, hey, Reach is done and we know what Invasion is now. You know, making a Team Slayer game in 2010 is pretty easy because we've done it for a long time. When we were developing Invasion during Halo Reach, we were making the maps and the game type at the same time, and we weren't, you know, the little tweaks here and there and push and pull to kind of get it right. Now that it's done and we know what it is, we can make maps based on that much easier and kind of know what's fun about it. And Breakpoint definitely switches it up with the second phase as an assault phase. Elites bring a bomb to blow up the doors. Which will play very differently from Boneyard and Spire.
I think for me it feels, I like Invasion, but I think that it also feels a lot more competitive for mm-hmm. a big team battle. The actual layout of the map seems there's a lot of great routes. There's not a lot of unused space where you're just kind of like running back to the fight. You know, there's always a place to kind of find a guy, put some bullets on him, get into an engagement and have some fun.
One of the things when you guys were first talking about Invasion, you mentioned like the fictional relevance behind the game type. And in Breakpoint specifically, I think some of the things that really add to it is the first time when you move to that second tier and the bridge pops out, you actually get it, and then you see that tunnel open up. You actually have things within the map moving, which just kind of add to that. And it's just one of those first times I saw it, I just stared and watched, and someone snuck up behind me and assassinated me. But it's just kind of cool, and it kind of adds to that immersion into the fictional stuff.
That light bridge feel from CE, right? Everybody wants a light bridge on a map.
Yeah. Definitely a lot of moving parts on Breakpoint. Again, you know, we're just focusing on these three maps. We can pour a lot more resources into it.
Well, I think this is about the end of our day, and I want to thank both Derek and Eric.
That rhymes.
It does.
Eric and Eric.
You guys should start a morning show.
Again.
Thanks again for joining us, guys, and we'll see you next time. You know, that theater was so beautiful. I just wanted to hang out there and chat forever. But I really appreciate and want to thank Derek and Eric, who I reiterate should have a morning talk show with those names, for taking time out and chatting with us about the map pack. It's those media days, at least for the guys working them, are really tough. You got to stay there all day and answer the same questions 20 times. And those guys are pros. So I once again really thank those guys for coming on. I had an absolute blast playing these maps. I know you've been checking them out too, Jeremy. What do you think about them so far?
I haven't gotten a lot of FaceTime with the maps as far as playing competitively, so you probably have a better understanding of them that way. But I mean, from what I've seen, they are phenomenal. But I'm really big fan of Tempest. It reminds me a lot of like a combination between some of my favorite maps from the past, like Relic, Valhalla, and Standoff. And I mean, just the maps look really, 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 really dialed in.
One of the things I really appreciated with Tempest is, it still takes place in this unnamed Halo ring, like Forge World, but it actually has a very unique aesthetic. And talking to Derek there at Bungie, he talked a little bit about that they were actually going for kind of a Lake Tahoe kind of vibe for it compared to traditionally Halo rings kind of look like stuff up here in the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest. And so it actually provides like a unique aesthetic to it. But that map's a ton of fun, and if you have someone with a Warthog who's good, and Derek and I rolled a couple of times with Warthogs, you can really do some damage just because of the way it's laid out. It has that kind of spine down the middle
ridge
of the map, which really helps out because it doesn't give you a lot of long sight lines unless you're playing as a team that's using jetpacks very effectively to get vertical so that they can get drop shots on you and everything.
One of the things I liked about it was I noticed that when I was tooling around in Forge, it's got some sweet different palette options that are reminiscent of what we see in Forge World. So people are really going to flip out when they start diving deep into that.
Yeah, and when you explore into it, you might even find things that you didn't think you could delete that you can delete. There's a rock wall in the back towards the waterfalls that you can actually pull out and actually create a tunnel pass through that's not there before.
The map is, Tempest specifically, is it seems like it's smaller at first, but when you start pushing around it, you see that it's actually, there's a lot of playable space there, a lot of fun.
Yeah, and obviously having those man cannon lifts at each one of the Forerunner bases is super useful for just jumping out to the middle. But you can also just drop down because you have rock cover there. You have the turret set up in the middle, and you're kind of open to fire, but you can drop down right in the middle of these little rocks. So there's tons of opportunity, long sight lines, but there's lots of places to kind of get out of the way as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We had some really good matches on there. I'd say my personal favorite was Anchor 9.
That was a surprise for me. It was a big surprise for me because I saw the screenshots initially. I thought that would be the one map out of the three that I would be less likely to want to play. But that map is laid out really solid. I mean, it really feels like a nice competitive close quarters map. It's got nice sight lines. It's got a nice little external pathway along the side of the ship where you can grab a flag and move. There's just a lot of really cool elements to that map. The floors.
Yeah.
We talked about that earlier. The floors are, a lot of the floors are glass, so you can look down onto the face of Reach.
And you kind of get a case of vertigo if you're not paying attention. Every time I play a new map for the first time, I like to just run around and look at skyboxes, and especially outside in the low G area, ships doing battle on top of Reach, and it's gorgeous. It's fun to look at. But the low G area is a lot of fun for
if you're getting in trouble, hopping out there and jumping up in the air and trying to get away from people, the way it runs down the side of the map is unique, and it offers easy call outs when you're playing the map, which is super useful when you're playing competitively. You can go low G side, saber side. It's you just fall into that vernacular really quickly, and the map seems to be laid out very intelligently.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed the first few times I was moving around in that map was that it reminded me somehow of Truth and Reconciliation's cargo bays, because they've got those two huge doors and they've got the energy shield on that, in between the doors and outside in space. And it just, for whatever reason, the setup reminded me of that, but it looks like it's going to play really awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah. And, talking to Derek, and they're always hesitant to, compare it to other maps, but in a lot of ways, this does play, it's reminiscent of how the Pit played from Halo 3. It's certainly not a pixel perfect remake or anything like that, but it's very reminiscent of the type of games and matches you would get into in the Pit.
Yeah.
Of course, the last map, but certainly not least, because it's ginormous, is Breakpoint, which is a new Invasion map. Which they've seemed to have really dialed in with Invasion, the way they've changed it up compared to how it plays in Spire or Boneyard. It's super cool the way it unlocks. The first one, you have to take these kind of shield kind of things down, stand in place, which is similar to what you've done before in Invasion. But then when you do, a path opens up in the right-hand side where the garage, basically this tunnel door, opens up. And then you have a basically a drawbridge that drops down the left-hand side. And just seeing those things moving on the map is really cool.
Yeah, it adds a sense of, this is actually – it feels almost like a campaign mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Talk about skyboxes, too. That one has a incredible, stellar skybox. You're looking up at the twin moons of Reach and – the huge Forerunner artifact that's sort of hanging there, looming in the distance.
And fortunately, you have some flight capabilities with a Banshee on the Covenant side and a Falcon on the Spartan side. And I have to say that Falcon is, in a lot of ways, it's usually your last line of defense, but it's an awesome line of defense because as they're trying to usually bring the stuff on foot, you can just rain down terror from above if you got a couple of guys in the turrets who are doing a really good job with it. And you just kind of constantly dodging because there's a Rocket Hog on that map. There is
there's enough space for him for sure.
Yeah, it's huge and frenetic. And we had so many matches where both offense and defense, the match would end on either side within 10 steps of the final of being able to score it. And the tension that hops up when you get in there like that is super awesome. And that's the kind of stuff, the kind of games that Invasion's kind of designed for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it looks awesome. I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, and we'll all be playing it soon enough. But someone else that we had on in the next segment, we actually had Bernie Burns, who you might know from Rooster Teeth and Red versus Blue. He actually dropped by the office a couple of weeks ago. He was in town doing a GameStop commercial for the Noble Map Pack, and we decided to invite him by to come back and come by and chat. It's actually a lot of fun. It's myself and Frank and Bernie, and the conversation goes off the rails pretty often, but I think you'll be entertained because we had a lot of fun actually recording it. So this runs for about 38 minutes, and we come back, Jeremy, and I'll close this episode out.
Welcome to the 343 Sparcast. I'm going to do some introductions here. On my left, to your stereo up, I have David Ellis. To my right, stereo infra, is Bernie Burns from Red versus Blue or Rooster Teeth.
Yeah. Hello.
What's up? Do you want to be called Rooster Teeths or Red versus Blue?
Rooster Tooths, I think.
Yeah, yeah. The corporation is Rooster Teeths, and the product is Red V's Blue.
That is correct.
Yeah.
What do you think? Well, give me some advice here. Should we brand now bigger? Should we try to have a Rooster Teeth corporate umbrella?
I think everyone understands it because you're like deluxe logo that pops up at the start and your little is a guitar riff, right? I guess it's a guitar. Yeah, yeah. It could be a banjo. I don't know.
I believe it's a baritone guitar.
It's nice.
Maybe you can expand out from just teeth to dental products. Dental industries.
We get random telemarketing calls you would not believe the calls.
Do you ever get calls from like chicken product people like Tyson, and they're like, oh, we're interested in your tooth technology. Aggressive, bitey chickens.
They want to muscle us out.
Yeah.
But the branding for the Rooster Teeth thing is one of those things where you don't realize when you're sitting in a spare bedroom with your buddies trying to come up with a name for your company when the state of Texas wants you to register for it.
Oh, is that? Like, or, it's like naming a band. Is this your origin episode?
I mean, pretty much. I mean, we didn't realize, oh, this is going to be on everything for the end of time. So we came up with a silly name, Rooster Teeth. And
I thought maybe Rooster Tooth was taken already in Texas.
Yeah, and you had to go plural.
Well, it actually was based on an expletive joke from our first episode.
Well, come on. You can hint here.
Yeah. Or we can bleep you.
Well, I mean, Rooster Teeth, you can just, you know, yeah. try to combine together.
I can't.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
This is some Texan thing. It's probably like, don't tread on me, or
it's like some Duke Nukem humor.
To test your red versus blue trivia, but the first episode, one guy calls another guy a bite.
Right.
But state of Texas surprisingly won't let you register bite productions. And also, we realized.
Oh,
I get it.
Well, I've been living with this secret for 10 years on and off, right? Pretty much, and I didn't know that.
Well, and the good thing is now is that none of the guys who buy T-shirts from us, their wives, you know, wives don't have to come in like shaking the credit card statement at them saying,
"That's true.
What in the heck is this?" Although they do anyway, I'm sure, for Rooster Teeth. They don't know what the heck it is.
I was going to say, if you guys were classy, you just come up with a shell company name so they don't even see it. It's shown up as like Retirement Industries Incorporated.
Well,
like
I'm surprised that Texas is all about like, I mean, not literally don't tread on me. That's obviously trademarked another state. But they are all about independence and freedom of speech and the Constitution and blah, 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 blah. Well, why aren't you allowed to call a company bite? A is a rooster, and a bite is just the thing you do.
And a rooster will bite you.
This irritates me because I tried to register my vanity plate as several things. I started with WTF BBQ, OMG WTF, and the state of Washington kept denying me until eventually I realized they probably don't have a vast department of people doing these, right? They probably get like 5 a day, right? And so every time I was coming up with some, you know, way to trick them, like someone was probably just looking at my submissions and going, come on, this guy with the same IP address is trying every single lame internet meme possible. I'm just going to shut him down.
Did you settle on one?
I did. For some reason, I waited a few days and got WTF BBQ. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of my end game runaround. And then I was like, there was some small print where you have to renew it every year or something. I was like, I'm never going to do that. So
you gave up?
You can't do it up. In like 5-year chunks or anything? Because you get your license, it's like 10 years now or something like that.
No, that's pretty much my arc, right, of effort on entertainment, right? I was playing Super Meat Boy the other night, and I'm like, this is awesome. This is exactly what I wanted it to be, and I'm asleep. And I'm on to the next thing. And it was like, but I don't mind that. Like, I don't mind paying for a short burst of exactly what it was that I thought I was paying for. And then if just because I'm easily distracted doesn't mean that, you know, there's.
Yeah, other people are going to put like 40, 50 hours in that game trying to beat like all 500 levels, dark and light mode and all that stuff. Yeah. I'm intimidated by Super Meat Boy. I'm afraid to try it.
What I didn't expect from it, and I don't know why, because I watch videos, was just how juicy and squishy your actual blob of meat feels.
Did you see the trailer?
The trailer is one of the greatest.
So my friends actually put that together.
Yeah. And have you seen this?
They did like
the
90s.
TV commercial?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it.
It's incredible.
So they did like a 90s era Sega Genesis commercial. Yeah. You know, the very extreme, I'm putting air quotes over extreme, with like the, you know, Sega does what Nintendo don't kind of.
Yeah, kid
attitude.
With sunglasses and spiky hair. And,
yeah.
Sounds like the new PSP commercial with what's the kid on the bus? Where he makes fun of the iPhone.
The Kevin Butler's sidekick guy?
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't remember his name.
It's some young kid. He makes fun of the iPhone as not being a legitimate gaming platform.
He's got apostrophe tude, so you got to pay attention to him.
Oh. And at the end, he has to whip out a phone to make fun of somebody. It's like, why would you put a phone, show that your product doesn't have a phone in the commercial?
That is, it's kind of weird. It's like,
I read an article, though, with the Meat Boy developers where they were scared of their own game. That's brutally hard for them.
I remember seeing it during the GDC indie game, like during the kind of testing period, like a couple years ago when they had it up there, like an old build of it. And back then it was way more simplified, but it was actually way more difficult back then than it is now.
What? I've never been to GDC, and I always hear about people always talking about
what?
It.
What?
Is it worth it to go to GDC as like someone who's not technically in the industry?
Well, you're in the industry.
Very
and we said
everyone in the industry is providing entertainment experiences through software, and that is the exact definition of what you guys do.
Entertainment through software.
You don't like there's this. So GDC is actually, you actually have a fair point. GDC is very engineer focused.
Right.
People say developer, but that's actually kind of all encompassing.
Right.
There's lots of developers that aren't coders. There's
and social, the social aspects are being increasingly important.
Yeah. And so as I think, honestly, as the games become you know, we're going through this transition phase where big games are becoming bigger and small games are becoming even smaller. So the types of people that go to these things are really wildly varied. And it's absolutely, you guys would be A, sort of mini celebrities to a lot of people there, but B, there's a lot to learn at GDC, and the engineering focus is becoming reduced as it becomes more of kind of a general all-encompassing business/development event.
And you can also learn like how many free parties can you get into in one night before you pass out.
Yeah, it's like Pokemon's, but for places where they have, you know, jello shots.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or any other sort of inappropriate.
You should absolutely go to GDC next year.
It sounds like it's approaching kind of an E3 level at this point.
So. No, it's definitely different. It feels a lot more casual and less intense. Okay. But
I mean, there's still a lot of networking type stuff goes on, but... Yeah. It's awesome. Like I've never gone as like on the other side. It's always been press side. So,
but the best part is the talks. I mean, as you know, the actual show is really dull. You walk around. There's some middleware guys. You might see a cool game or two.
Yeah.
You do all that in a few minutes. It's not like E3 where you keep discovering these nuggets or waiting in line.
It really is all about the panels.
See the 3DS, which I still haven't seen. So for all, it just seems like a lie to me. There's no 3D.
I agree with you. It's magic. That's all I see it.
But it's like those Magic Eye puzzles. Where, oh, it's a schooner. Shut up. You're a liar. Right? So. But there's the panels and the discussions and the
postmortems are really good.
Are really good. They're really interesting. You go hear Jonathan Blow talk about his new game and that sort of stuff at that one end, and on the bigger end you've got like, you know, sometimes Miyamoto shows up and stuff like that. So
can the average person just get into it? Just buy a ticket and go?
Well, sort of. I mean,
it's expensive. The average person
in the industry can. Yeah. You're from the industry, so you won't have any issues. But
yeah,
I'm an average person.
It's not as easy to game.
Don't sell yourself short. You're above average. Yeah, slightly. Ever so slightly.
He said mini before, so I'm just thinking that was a compliment.
It's not like E3 where you just all you have to do is prove that you want to
have my fanzine.
Yeah, you have a website. We went through an experience where we had a website with 300 readers, and we were doing game reviews, and we got an E3 with press badges. Nice. And it was a very proud moment.
Yeah, Comic-Con is both my favorite and my least favorite of those shows, because there's a lot more gamey now, and there's definitely a lot of game stuff. I mean, there's no two ways about it. A lot of movie stuff, obviously. The problem I see with Comic-Con, which is good for me because those are the kinds of things I like, but you do see that, you know, the occasional husky Jedi looking just a little bit sad that his show has been co-opted by these giant corporations, but it was like, whatever. But they also are super excited to get to see a trailer for Legion. That turned out great, didn't it?
As long as they get to see their steampunk segue, they're
exactly
good to go.
Yeah, so.
If you want to see the bitter people, you should talk to the comic people there. They are by far the most bitter people.
This is my
But you get the weird thing about Comic-Con is that they have a concept of tenure. So if you've been at Comic-Con since 19 Oatcake, you can have the best spot in the whole. You know, we try to, you know, Microsoft is small. We're a small mom and pop operation up in the Pacific Northwest, and we try to get a bigger booth, and like, can't get a bigger booth till you had a bigger booth. It's like, oh my God.
You know what we need to do is find someone who's had tenure for 30 years and just buy them.
I think
it's divide and conquer. Yeah. I think that's the plan.
It's almost like a really nice suburban neighborhood, right? Yeah. Where all of a sudden, you know, the land values have suddenly gone up quite a bit.
One guy paints his house pink and it's...
Yeah, and we definitely want to put up a McMansion right on Mike's erotic comic memorabilia, right? Or, so just build it.
Yeah, Otaku Pleasures.
Buy 4 10x10 booths, demolish them, and build a mansion booth.
Yeah. But you're totally right about the comic guys, because it's like the last day I decided... I'm going to try to find comics at Comic-Con. It took me about 20 minutes to find this dirty corner. You have to know like the secret handshake to actually get back there and see comic books.
We had to learn our lesson, because we got to the Reach booth, as we called it. It was really the Microsoft booth. And we got there and it was chain link fence and it was designed to look like all gritty and extreme. And the Reach was in the back of the booth. And Comic Jumper, because presumably it was called Comic Jumper, was right front and center for the Microsoft thing. And it's like, they take it really seriously. They're trying to keep it mom and pop and organic. But, you know, behind it, there's the Warner Brothers Ultra booth.
Or in the Thor's. Yeah. Did you see like the Thor setup where they had like Thor's throne?
Yeah, and the giant golden throne on the...
It's like an actual movie prop or something. Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to go this year, but the previous year I saw the Iron Man suits. Like they had gallery of all the Iron Man suits, like physically there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty nuts. I can't wait till next year when all the Tron fans are crying bitter tears because it turned into The Matrix Reloaded. Should be awesome.
No,
you're saying that Tron's not going to be good?
I did not say that.
No.
I just said it was going to be Matrix Reloaded. I made no judgment call on Matrix Reloaded.
We had a mail thread. We have an internal spam mail thread here at 343, and we deal with the, you know, the finer nuances of gaming in the industry and, you know, hilarious cat memes.
And air guitar.
That was what set those people off. And you probably couldn't tell from my tone and the reply to that email. So somebody sent out the new Tron trailer and it was Daft Punk, and it was awesome. It was amazing.
Oh, wait, how did you describe Daft Punk to me one time when I talked to you about a concert going on? You said it was nerd music.
It is nerd.
Still
music.
Stand
it's
by
like,
that.
It's like Oingo Boingo, right? It's nerd music. I mean, you can't. Are you denying that nerds like Daft Punk in significant numbers?
I absolutely, they do.
Well, exactly.
But the insinuation is that only nerds like Daft Punk.
No, I like them, and I'm really cool. I'm like 10 Fonzies. Seriously.
Yeah.
That makes you like a 260 years old.
And once Kanye's embraced it, hasn't everyone embraced it?
Yeah, exactly.
It?
Right.
That's true.
Yeah. Feet Kanye. Right. So I sent out the new Tron trailer, and everyone in the mail started responding back, oh, I like that Tron airplane, blah, blah, blah. Then somebody sent back the picture of the guy, the real character in it, who has a
David
walking
Bowie.
Stick, a cane. He's kind of a David Bowie archetype, right? And he's spinning the cane, and he's doing a kind of a definitely a Clockwork Orange little thing in there, right? And it's like, that's awesome. This is like super charismatic moment of genius in the Tron thing that takes it out of its like kind of sterile predictability. It's, I hate saying it, but it's not your father's Tron, right? It's like they're doing something with it, and they're gonna make this really interesting and cool. And somebody immediately wrote back with a picture of that guy. It's like, they've ruined it. Oh my God. I'm not naming names.
The
but
purity
like,
of Tron.
Come on. That was like one of the highlights of the whole thing was that intro. And it was like, this has character. He's got flair. Like nobody seemed mad when, you know, Flynn shows up and he's old and young. Spoiler.
Yeah. And so, you know, like someone's going to show up. You know, that the kid that plays his son, like the one, the Neo character. Yeah. He's like, what do you want?
Yeah, he's more annoying than whatever.
Do you want someone with personality or someone walking around going, whoa.
That's a hard character, though, because that's the proxy for every, online person, essentially.
You're visiting.
Yeah. I mean,
you're jacked in, as the kids like to say.
How is that guy going to be appealing to anybody?
But like you said, Keanu pulled it off just by saying, whoa.
Oh, man. It made an epic crap ton of money, too.
Yeah.
Oh, good jealous. For him.
He gave a lot of it away, actually.
Well, I mean, if you look back at the original Tron, too, it wasn't a representation of what, trying to figure out what's going on and how do you represent online or in the digital world. I mean, is your buddy who didn't like this character, is he waxing nostalgic for grid bugs? And
I think he wanted it to be called Trough, which was literally the opposite state of Tron, right? Like if you're an early 80s coder. But computer people want things a certain way, and cool.
Are you saying this was an engineer? This was an engineer that was complaining about this?
What? No, that's your inference. Not at all. GDC. Anyway, video games.
Yeah. It was a little tangent. Yeah. What are you doing in town, Bernie? Why are you here in our lovely closet of recording and wonder? Yeah.
Well, I just came over from where we're shooting a DLC commercial for the Noble Mac Pack.
Yeah.
And we're shooting a commercial for GameStop where people can go into GameStop and pre-order the Noble Pack before it comes out. And if they do that, they get a Mark V helmet that's flaming for their avatar.
Huh.
You told me something that was really interesting. I did not realize you guys did those GameStop ads until you told me about 20 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. How long have you guys been doing them?
Well, for a while now. We've been doing commercials. Actually, the first paying gig that we ever got was from Microsoft. It was in the first summer after we put out Season 1 of Red versus Blue, and Xbox hired us to make all the videos for the kiosks that are at like Target and Walmart.
Right.
You know, they, when you're not playing the game, they're just running in the loop and annoying you. That was one of the things that we did. And
kids from putting their grimy fingers on all the boxes back before they put them behind glass.
Pretty much. And to stop hanging off the Xbox controller that's welded to the front of it.
The parents can leave them there for 40 minutes at a time and come back.
But we did that. And then we started – I guess we just got a reputation for being guys who could take a video game and make it look as good as it possibly can without bugging the developers for extra time and extra resources. And it would still be representative of the game. So we started doing that. So we've had a pretty good run of doing, for television, doing, machinima work, essentially.
Yeah.
We don't write the spots, and we don't produce everything, but if they have to put video game footage in it, there's a good chance that we were probably the guys who did it.
You guys obviously been playing lots of stuff. You said you talked before we went on, Mike, that you don't get a chance to play as much as you used to because there's just so many games out there right now. What are you guys playing? What are you playing? Well, obviously, Reach and check out the Noble maps.
Yeah, we got one of our guys, Jeff, who plays everything because he does a show called Achievement Hunter for YouTube, and it's just... I mean, he blazes through almost every game that comes out in a couple of days. But yeah, I'm the kind of guy where I'm one of those achievement guys where I have to go through and get every achievement
really?
In the game. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not I that. Really I'm not that.
Guy. Not that guy. I pick the part of the game that I like and I just play it ad nauseum.
Yeah, I'm nutty collector, but only for digital stuff. Like I went out and bought the Reach console And then I went out and bought the legendary set because I wanted to have the good flaming man. Helmet in. Yeah, there you go. I'm one of those guys. And because I wanted the flaming helmet in the game. So I had to get both of them.
Yeah, thanks.
I think I got a new car just because of you.
You paid for this podcast equipment.
Yeah, nice.
Thanks.
Paid for my flaming money.
I do like the Reach console.
Yeah, I bought it because I had been rocking the Halo 3 console, mm-hmm. but it was getting to a point where I felt like it needed to be upgraded, and it was getting a little too loud, and it was amazing. Like, when the first time I turned on the Reach console, and I'd messed around with it at Comic-Con because we gave a bunch of them out, but it's more quiet than my Wii, and I never turned my Wii on, so that should tell you something of how quiet the console is. It's pretty impressive.
I still have a Wii.
Is it quieter than a turned off Wii?
I think so. Because my Wii's just sitting there slowly crying, absorbing dust. But yeah, it's shocking how quiet it is. And
You'll pick it up again for that Donkey Kong Country remake there.
Yeah.
I hear it's good. About, yeah. I liked Donkey Kong Country. Yeah. It's pretty.
Somebody's doing that.
It's retro. Yeah. Your neck of the woods. Yeah.
So it's like a nice, like, it's not rare, but retro is like at least semantically the next best thing, right?
Well, they've
like,
proven they can take someone else's franchise, do awesome stuff with it.
Yeah, and they're definitely like a Nintendo stalwart. So I think people are just comfortable with that.
Yeah.
There's not too many video game companies left in Austin, at least not any of the big ones that were there before.
They're on Dallas now, right? There's a few of them.
Dallas is such a beautiful city. I just love to look at the architecture and the parks and the museums and the galleries. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
And the book depositories.
And
you just went to a dark place.
And the medieval times restaurants.
When you're describing architecture in Dallas, you're already in a dark place. Yeah, we're already there.
Cut to my bedroom with Logan's Run posters. And you're
Oh, God. I've never been to Dallas.
Did you spend time in Dallas?
Oh, I've spent a lot of time in Dallas. You have to spend a lot of time in Dallas when you go there because everything is so freaking far
away. It's like LA.
You fly into this is the bad sign. You fly into Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. Beautiful place. Beautiful, beautiful airport. And you pass Dallas. You see the little, the skyscraper, Central District, the sort of teeming suburbs sprawling out from it. And you just keep flying. And you keep flying, and you keep flying, and you're like, we must be in a different state. And then you land. It's kind of like SeaTac in a way where you're like, really, this is not Seattle.
Or Narita. It's more outside like Tokyo.
Tacoma. Well, at least Narita Airport is called Narita.
That's true.
Right? Dallas Airport is called Dallas-Fort Worth Love Field, whatever it's called, right?
Yep.
And it's nowhere near Dallas at all. It's not even ballpark. And you get in a cab, and the cab driver looks very happy.
Dallas is like that. Dallas is like that in Washington, D.C. I mean, you have Reagan National, right, downtown, but everyone flies into Dallas, and that's pretty far out.
Yeah.
So it's a little similar to that. How did we get on to...
Because we're talking about there's no developers left in
Why are they? Why did you chase all the developers out, Bernie?
I don't know. It's just the way Austin is. Austin's kind of a smaller market,
it's an awesome place to live. So that's kind of why... That's where a lot of developers are. They're in places that people want to live. Right?
That makes sense.
That's why Epic is, and they also get crazy tax breaks. Yeah. That's what the other thing is.
It's weird. I always wonder why more internet people don't do that, because internet people could theoretically do their jobs from wherever.
It's hiring, right? So you go to the place where there's available staff, and the staff go to the places where they want to live. So you end up with these sort of little sort of gravitational balances of, Seattle, San Francisco, LA, New York, and,
Edmonton. Yeah,
it's also a confluence of design people and the engineers and the tech. And
different types of people live in it. Even here, we have a concept of the West Side and the East Side where
East Side
West Siders. Yeah, David is definitely very much East Sider. The West Sider just means you live literally in the city of Seattle, and practically all we ever do is go to gallery openings and nightclubs, right? And over here, they go to strip malls and claim jumper early
not
bird
true.
Special.
I live in Bellevue, which is the OC. Of Seattle.
Doesn't even sound the least bit like a stereotype.
And we don't encourage it or provoke reactions from the East Siders, because they don't react. They just go back to their McMansion and fall asleep in their
feather beds.
They can't hear you over the sound of the music.
Exactly.
The Pottery Barn.
Sadly, I can't really disagree with you.
You got nothing, but it's way cheaper over here on the East Side.
But I'm from San Francisco. I haven't driven a car in 5 years, so I wasn't really particularly interested in dealing with like 45 minutes of traffic every day. So that's why I settled Bellevue.
Well, that's what Foursquare is for. That way you can become the mayor of the 520 bridge.
Oh, God. We do have a producer here in the studio who is Foursquaring from traffic. Yeah.
No, REP literally was the mayor of the 520 bridge through Foursquare, which is – if you don't know what Foursquare is, it's just a stupid game where you're like – Pokemon collecting locations, and the more you collect them, the more rank up in that location.
It has the record for being the shortest amount of time I've ever spent on a social network, ever.
I've never even said I'm going to count on it.
I think it was a week and a half that I was stuck with Foursquare, and then I realized I'm telling everyone in the world where I am at every point. Basically, I'm telling everyone I'm not home. Is what
I like. Yeah. I like Facebook. It has this like beautiful, elegant design that just says, even if you don't want to tell me about you, you can just comment on other people's crap. You can just say yes or no to this person's entire existence and their raison d'etre. They're like, I feel this way about this movie. And you can just go on there and say, you're stupid.
I wish there was an unlike. I wish there was an unlike button as well. There's the like, or just like ambivalent.
But because you know them, there's no anonymity. So you at least have to keep it within the bounds of civilization and society. I mean, YouTube is like, apparently racists and gun owners just go onto the YouTube to comment. I was like, I'm going to say a racist thing now. It's like, what? Why do you have a computer just to be racist?
It's 12:30. It's time to be racist.
Yeah, I know.
It's racist like, o'clock.
That should be a test now. If you can actually read whatever the language of YouTube is, then there's something wrong with you. Yeah. If you can actually read a comment and it makes sense to you. We go through our YouTube comments sometimes, and it's really startling.
And sometimes you just have to turn them off.
Here's what I understand about it, is that when I was growing up, I grew up, I'm going to date myself a little bit here. I grew up pre-internet. Like, I didn't have the internet as a kid. How old do you think I am? I don't know.
I think we all grew up pre-internet here.
Yeah?
I
grew
up pre-PC.
Oh. Abacus?
No, I mean, like, the first computer I used, I believe I had chin hair, and it was Commodore PET.
Nice.
Commodore PET, really?
Yeah. Respect. Yeah.
What was your first game?
First game I ever played?
Yeah.
The first game I ever played was Pong on one of those sort of generic Pong consoles. But the first game that made a super impact on me was probably it was far from the first game I ever played, but Raiders of the Lost Ark was the first time I was like,
oh, yeah.
The Atari 2600 one?
I remember that.
Yeah. It was like, snake. This is like real life. The Mesa parachute thing, right? You're like, oh, my God. Yeah.
I remember, like, it's actually bringing it back. My first game I can remember playing was Disc of Tron, also for the 2600.
That was in television, actually.
No, I had the 2600 one.
I didn't know they made that.
Yeah. It had one of those kind of angular.
It wasn't a disc. Yeah. It was more like a, you know, Mesoamerican pyramid.
Yeah, it was. It was one of those cartridges that had, like, the pointed end. It was kind of like the equivalent of, like, the 10-gen.
I wish I didn't know that existed. I could have shut Randy Welch up for the rest of his life. He lorded that Intellivision version over me through all the time.
You didn't have the internet to look it up, though.
Yeah, but what were we talking about? Why did that come up, about the pre-internet stuff?
Oh, well, yeah, because you said you grew up. You said you grew up before the pre-internet. You said you were dating yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but where was I headed with that?
I don't know. I think you wanted to talk about dating yourself.
Yeah, that's true. How is that?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. With the YouTube comments.
Oh, yeah,
Is that I never wrote. Like, I didn't write letters or anything like that. But I knew how to write, you know, and I don't understand how there's more writing now in our culture.
And yet it's worse.
How is that possible?
I think it's texting.
So all they do – no. That's the thing though. But you're absolutely right. They type more. They write more. They have more access to spell checking than ever before. Every device spell checks to a fault, right? As anyone who's ever tried typing in something on an iPhone, like, son of a.
Yeah.
And but you're right. And now that everyone is far more illiterate than they ever were before.
It seems impossible. How does it's more the ultimate, practice make you
it's,
worse?
It's just the natural rebellion. It's like, you want to tell me what to do?
Spell the way the words the way you want me to.
Screw you, nerd.
Yeah.
Square with your punctuation.
Grammar.
Get out of here with your active voice.
Yeah. And your exceptions, like it.
I'm either going to not use the shift key at all, or I'm going to use it all the time.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
Yeah. You should just be able to buy a special keyboard that's just all caps all the time because you're so mad.
Separate keyboard. Yeah. Just punch it.
The worst thing is when you're, you know, it's funny how that automatically feels like anger. But like when your mom uses the Facebook and she's all caps anyway, cause she just doesn't know any better. And it's like.
And she calls it the Facebook, like the Twitter.
Yeah,
she's old school. It was the Facebook for a while.
Oh, that's
right?
True.
Yeah. Do you guys see that? You guys see Social Network?
No, I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna movie to see a movie that isn't 3D.
But it's.
Are you a 3D? You're like
really?
A snob?
No,
I was gonna say you have to be the opposite.
Like I've got a kid, so it's rare that I ever get out of the house, and when I do, it's got to be for an event movie because otherwise, like I'll. You know, your TV, HD TV and Blu-ray and all that makes – you can have mini event movies in your house now that you couldn't before, right? Because you got surround sound and stuff. So it has to be a super event for me to go see it. So I want to see Jackass 3D.
Which is amazing.
It has some of the most effective 3D I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's possibly just my fear of d-
But I was, it was really effective.
The opening and closing of the movie, 1,000 frames per second, like super slow-mo. It is the best 3D I've ever seen in my
special
life.
Special effects, the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're doing a show now called Immersion, where we're trying to get one of those cameras. It's called a Phantom camera, not the 3D one, but
slow-mo.
The super slow-mo ones, yeah. And the old school ones, when they were filmed, like the ones the military ones they'd shoot helicopters with, so you could see the blades turning, they would run through film so fast that they couldn't have a take-up reel, and they would just spit all the exposed film into a bag. Yeah, like a dark bag, but a big pile, and then work it out later.
That is kind of how my desktop works, though, my PC desktop. It's only a bag of film. Is that crap I was working on?
You hear Frank bang on the keyboard like Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. What did I roughly call that in my search?
My email inbox, big stack of
junk. Oh, that's my hard drive is my email inbox. This is where I keep all my stuff.
I do that. I
mail things to myself. And
really?
Yeah.
Are you one of those people that puts everything on their desktop?
Yeah.
I can't. That would destroy me.
I'm anal retentive. I don't want everything.
Eventually, I realize that it's not right, and I will put it all in a folder called old. and I go into that folder old, and there's another folder in there called old.
Older.
Like a Matryoshka doll, right? And it's like... never-ending divide by zero super folder until I get to the bottom, and there it is, the original ZX81 install of 3D Monster Maze.
It's the beginning of the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
Somewhere there's Moses. He's talking to a bush. Yeah.
And he's speaking in binary.
So I'm glad we had Bernie here. I think we found out a lot about Red versus Blue and Rooster Teeth and the process of machinima making.
And a lot about Halo, too.
I feel that if you were a Halo fan or a machinima fan, this podcast has probably set you on a path to greatness.
And this might last you for like 6 months.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jewels of information.
I think we're just going to put this podcast out every month and just renumber it.
Yeah, exactly.
Every listening is a little bit different. You're going to get a little something different every time, a little nugget of wisdom and truth.
Yeah. I did want to ask Bernie a question. Like, I hate to be on topic or serious, but when you're saying you're a writer, what is the process of writing with RVB these days? What do you do? Do you say, oh, I have been affected by something I saw on television or my life, and I want to do a RVB skit about it?
Well, I mean, now at the point where we've done eight full seasons, which is I think we're over 400 episodes total across everything. Now it's to the point where I feel like I know the characters so well that I can just come up with a scenario like, you know, let's say the Reds get or somebody gets a misdelivered message from command. And it's just what characters would be funniest in that scenario. And it's like, well, let's say it goes to Red Team. You know, Sarge would be great because he would get the message and then Griff could riff on it. And then it's just – they kind of write now themselves in a way. We just ping pong back and forth the characters and then who can interact with who. And
you borrow some manatees from Family Guy.
Exactly. And they push the balls up and that's it, you know. But it's like that's what we do. We take a scenario and then now because we know the characters so well, we just work with the characters. And it's fun. And then we can add in, you know, these now arcing plots and then we just insert our guys as stumbling blocks.
And let you guys do like CG and stuff. Like it's insane like the amount of flexibility you guys have compared to when it was just straight up machinima.
Well, we established in the first episode of Red versus Blue, one of the characters says, all they ever do is stand there and talk. That's what they're doing last week. That's what they'll be doing 5 minutes from now, standing there and talking. And after, I guess, 8 years, we kind of had to get away from people. Like, why don't these guys ever do anything? All they ever do is yell at each other. So we were, you know, we wanted to flex a little bit, and it's been fun. And we want to do something, you know, if, you know, you do machinima action, it's really just watching someone play Halo badly, essentially. You know, you'd have a better experience playing Halo. You can't top that. So, you know, we have to do something that's kind of outside the box for that.
Awesome. Bernie, thank you very much for coming to our, once again, our closet of wonder and mystery. Perhaps you can come back again and maybe we'll talk a little bit about Halo.
Maybe there'll be a new Jackass movie that we can talk about.
Nice. In 4D. You have to travel to the future to watch it and then come back.
It'll be like 4D because those guys will be about 70 years old for the next one.
Fine with that.
Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. I actually had an absolute blast. I'd only met Bernie once before we recorded that segment, which is always a little weird when you're recording something with someone that you don't really know that well. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, you know, Frank and Bernie have known each other for years and years and years, which kind of helped break the ice, which might be why I didn't really talk for the first 2 minutes we were recording. Jeremy, thanks again for coming on this week. Really appreciate it.
Happy to.
Yeah.
Had a blast.
And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Jeremy co-created our Different Way to Campaign series. And I believe we have a new episode which should hit before this episode comes out.
Yeah, it should be this coming weekend for us. But in the future, it would be the weekend that just passed. And it's going to be called Boarding Action. And it's pretty... pretty clever.
What's the topic?
So the idea behind Different Way to Campaign is to look at a campaign mission or like an encounter within a mission from a different perspective than you're normally used to. It's something that CoCop and myself, Jacob Benton and myself, did when we were in the community. And a lot of fans have been doing this ever since Halo 1, where they'll try to like launch a Warthog over something. So for this particular episode, it's called Boarding Action. You go to the city of New Alexandria, that mission. And when you get a jetpack, you strap it on and you get into a Falcon and you use that jetpack to launch from one Banshee to the next, clearing out each squad of Banshees as they go through the city. So it's a little bit challenging in that you have to make sure you time your jumps, make sure you use your jetpack accordingly, but it makes for a really interesting experience because now you don't feel like you have to rely on a Falcon or traditional like UNSC transportation. So it's kind of an interesting little perspective into that that mission, and that's what Different Way to Campaign is all about.
You mentioned the community involvement. Some communities have been doing this. I believe Halo Challenges has been actually going through after the fact when episodes hit, and they're actually getting their community together and actually recreating Different Way to Campaign, which is kind of what you guys want.
Yeah. So one of our friends from Halo Challenges, Redemption, has been initiating. Sorry, we had an episode earlier called Way of the Ninja, where you have to go through the entire Nightfall mission without using grenades and guns.
Which was brutal, but
it's brutal.
And
without
blast.
A forklift glitch, because that seems to be something people are now doing. But basically, you go through that mission, and he's got an entire challenge set up specifically for Waypoint, and we really appreciate working with those guys. And we're also doing a call to action on our own forum, where we're having people from our forum who pay attention to our site put together clips of their attempts of recreating some of the stuff that we did in the entire season of Different Way to Campaign while we're in Reach. So we're excited about that.
And of course, we're easy to reach. I've mentioned this in the previous episode. I'm going to hit it up again. I'm going to hit it up every episode. You know, we want to hear from everyone on what you think of the episode so far, what you liked, what you don't like, what do you want to hear in the future. We're, like I said, we're easy to get in touch with. You can hit us up on Twitter, which is twitter.com/HaloWaypoint, one word. You can find us at Facebook. Also, just search for Halo Waypoint, one word, or halowaypoint.com, which is our main website where you can hit us up on the forums. And if you want to hit me up on my Twitter account, it's twitter.com/David Ellis. One word, once again, that seems to be the theme. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. Jeremy, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And speaking of getting in touch with, I think the December episode, we're actually going to do a mailbag where we're taking questions from the fans and community. So all those places I just mentioned to you, feel free to submit questions. If you, anytime you submit a question, if you want to tag it, Sparkcast mailbag, that would be two words, Sparkcast mailbag, maybe three, depending on your spacing. But if you can just space that out or send it to us, Sparkcast mailbag, and we'll have Jeremy back. And I think we also have Frank and Kevin, Grace, which is who is our managing editor. And we'll try to answer some questions from the community. And hopefully that'll be a good listen for you. And look for that coming in December. So once again, thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be here when you need us.